This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Our next guest aims to convince you that by the end of this segment, you're going to be excited about identifying ferns. Skeptical? Well, she's already got all of Vermont Edition on board. Lynn Levine is the author of Identifying Ferns the Easy Way, a pocket guide to common ferns of the Northeast. Now, I didn't realize there was a hard way, but I am excited to learn the easy way. Lynn, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here, especially since I know how much you love nature.
I do love nature, and I love ferns, but I often walk by a fern and go, oh, there's a fern. Why should I care about what kind of fern it is?
A fern is a fern is a fern, right? That's what people think. Well, actually, it's really helpful in terms of understanding the ecology of the area sometimes. So if you find a maidenhair fern, then you'll see me get super excited because that's where the ginger and the leeks and the hepatica grow. And it's where the trees grow the tallest, so it's the healthiest place. So that's an area that is rich in nutrients and is very fertile.
So it sounds like, Lynn, basically you're saying I just need you with me for all of my walks because I will see you get excited and then I can get excited.
No, you will so get excited. People get so excited about fiddlehead ferns in terms of eating them, but they don't know that every fern has a fiddlehead. It's just the fiddlehead fern, which is the ostrich fern, is the only one that's edible. And it's not even edible just without cooking it, which is confusing for some people. But it's true that fiddleheads exist, and they have a mathematical formula that's quite exquisite. So you can get very excited about that.
We're talking with Lynn Levine. She is the author of Identifying Ferns the Easy Way, a pocket guide to common ferns of the Northeast. We're talking with her about how to identify ferns and why you might want to do them. And, you know, in looking at your book, Lynn, one of the interesting things that I saw was that you talk about general tips. You talk about how to use the guide, and it is a pocket guide. You can literally stick it in your pocket. And one of the first things that you want to tell people is about how ancient ferns are. They have been around for 400 million years.
You got it. It's absolutely true. They've been around way before that, you can imagine. So there were cyanobacteria in the ocean that produced so much oxygen that some plants could move to land. And one of them, besides mosses, were ferns. And then they grew as tall as trees.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. And then because the roots weren't that strong, they fell down, and they created the coal of today.
So we have ferns to thank for our home heating.
You betcha. And ferns, they're used, many Native Americans and so forth have herbal uses of the ferns. But I find it just very interesting. It's like you go out in the woods and you see a ginger, a plant, and you go, wow, that's so exciting. So once you start knowing more about the ferns, you can get super excited to find one that you didn't even know existed.
Yeah, and you say, as you said, you know, having certain ferns around is sort of like a sentry. Like you can look for other plants that you might be interested in.
Absolutely. So that helps you in terms of that. It also lets you know whether, so if you have a sensitive fern, for example.
That's an actual name for it. You're not being judgmental.
It's sensitive to the frost in the fall. And it also grows in wet areas. And you might not know that it's wet without the sensitive fern. And if I'm creating a road for logging, let's say, it's a really good clue for me, stay out of this area or do something like log in the winter. So they're very helpful in terms of that.
What makes a fern a fern?
You know, it took hundreds. I mean, it's not until 1860 that we figured this out, that ferns are produced by spores, not seeds. And they also have a very, you could call it a secret life of ferns because they alternate generations. First, there's the what's called a sporophyte because it produces spores. That's what we see. That's the leafy part. And then that produces the spores, which then grow into, this is the secret part. It's a little organism about a quarter of an inch big called a gametophyte because it's, and it's totally independent of the sporophyte. It has its own root system. It creates its own chlorophyll. And then on it, okay, this is what's very interesting, is that there's a male and a female part. And like in animals, the sperm from the male swim to the female part and produce an egg, which then becomes the fern that we see.
It is fascinating. I think you've got us all hooked, Lynn.
Yes. Yes.
But, you know, one of the other things that's so interesting about ferns is, as you say, they've been around for 400 million years. And it seems like because they are easily adaptable and, you know, can sort of deal with changes in the environment perhaps better than some other plants and animals, that they may be around even longer than we are.
Absolutely. So they have made it. There have been five extinctions, and one of them was before ferns. They have made it through four extinctions. And the only one people know about are when dinosaurs were extinct, but there was one 220 million years ago, and that when 90% of living organisms died. But the ferns survived. So will they make it through the sixth extinction? That's a question.
Yeah, and it's a question we may not be around to answer, frankly.
That's absolutely. Well, hopefully there's not a sixth extinction, but in any case, they are long-term survivors.
So, Lynn, before we let you go, let me ask you one other tidbit to share with us that's super interesting about ferns in our area and what they might tell us about some of our animal populations around. And why does an abundance of ferns tell us anything about the deer herd?
Oh, you got right to my heart there. So when there's an abundance of ferns, it somewhat says that the deer don't eat the ferns. So they eat everything else. So when there's a high population of deer, the ferns grow, especially the hay-scented and the bracken fern and the lady fern. They're the ones that spread out. And so you can say, wow, it's so incredibly great that there's so many ferns. But really, I get a little sad in some ways because it means that the deer population is too high.
So, Lynn, there are about 12,000 species of ferns worldwide, and we have, what, close to 50 in our region. And you're giving us the common ones, right? So not all of the rare ones, but you want people to be able to go for a walk in the woods with your book and identify the ferns that they are likely to see around them.
Yes, absolutely. And the other ones are so rare that we don't. I mean, there are several that are almost extinct. But yeah, we just want to be able to. Those are the ones I know, the 28. The others are very rare. So I'm trying to get people clued in. And, you know, my mission is to get people excited about the woods so they can protect them. So what better way?
And do you have a favorite fern? Is that like asking you an unfair question, or can you give us a favorite?
Well, I mentioned it earlier because it is maidenhair fern. It's the one that tells us that trees are the healthiest and the tallest. So the trees don't grow in terms of when they're wider, they're not necessarily healthier. But the taller a tree is, the better the site is. And it probably has calcium, which we have more of than in New Hampshire, which has granite. So we have more species of ferns than any other state in New England.
Yet again, Vermont leads the nation.
Exactly.
As Verbgas goes Vermont. Lynn Levine is the author of Identifying Ferns the Easy Way, a pocket guide to common ferns of the Northeast. She lives in Dummerston. Lynn, thank you very much for being on the program again.
It's so much my pleasure. Thank you, Jane.